Hey there, welcome to After Hours with me, Rick Hogan. This studio is jammed. This studio is jammed as it ever has been. So you're going to hear from a lot of people during this first segment, and it's all going to be justified and good. Jane Sachs I've known for a few years. She put on a show about studs and working in America, and now she is getting to something. Jane, I find this show, Project Anne's Pan, even more ambitious than the stud show. Am I naive, wrong, crazy, what?
No, I mean, why else would you wake up in the morning if not to be more ambitious, right? I mean, you know, being on a constant learning curve is what is really, you know, exciting. And
those 400,000 of you who still buy the print Sunday newspaper saw a story of mine in there about this Project Anne's Pan. What it didn't explain, because I didn't have 8,000 words in which to do it, is how this collaborative effort came to be. Many of your collaborators are in here. Many others will be in Garfield Park next weekend. But how did this come to be? What's the seed of this?
Well, I'll start with just the mission of Project Anne, which is really about creating new models of cultural participation, right? And the people who start the participation are often the creative people, starting to think about work that they want to do that really is about equitable participation, which means that there's no end user, right? It's not like we're doing things and then we're delivering it to someone.
Right.
Everyone who is part of PAN is actually one of the participants. And so it really came out of Claire Chase, the extraordinary Claire Chase, and who's here today.
She really is. I got to tell you something, Claire, when you read, and you people should look up Claire Chase. And I was, frankly, I had known about you a bit from John von Rhine's glowing reviews in the Tribune. I was kind of overwhelmed by Claire Chase. I said, you know, you should be as famous as Madonna or something.
Oh, come on.
I'm serious. I'm serious. The accolades and the utter, not over-the-top appreciation is really stunning. And MacArthur Grant aside, hi.
Hi. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's fun to have you here. Because I was so taken, when Jane first told me about this project, I was just so taken with it, not only where it's going to be, but what it is. How did you get involved?
Well, I had the great fortune of being a fellow with Project Anne, one of the first fellows. And so Jane and I actually worked on a project that preceded this with a wonderful composer, Du Yun. And so we stretched our collaborative muscles in that first year of the fellowship, and both of us ended it by saying, well, what's next? What's the bigger project? What's the big question we want to ask? And right around that time, I was working on a project in LA that involved 104 flutes.
Wow.
It was the first time that I had been
including yours included.
Yeah. So I was
139.
I was on the 104th chair, right? And I knew that there was something in this experience of bringing 104 community members together that needed to be expanded upon, that needed to be deepened. And Jane and I had many brainstorming sessions about what this might look like. Could we create a companion piece to this piece that had 104 flutes? And would people have to be playing instruments, or could we conceive of an orchestra and a chorus in terms of other types of instruments, and perhaps instruments that anybody could play rather than just practitioners? And so I invited my dear friend, the brilliant composer Marcos Balter, to this performance with 104 flutes in Los Angeles. And I believe, Marcos, you correct me if I'm wrong here, but I believe it was after you saw that performance that the term Pan, the idea Pan, first came out of your mouth. And you said, okay, this is what this is going to be.
Well,
forget the flute.
Well, either you're an expert in Greek mythology, or you were the most inventive guy in the world, Marcos. Welcome to the show. How does that idea pop into your head?
It's pretty interesting. So Claire told me about her work with Project Anne, and I remember that maybe their original conversation was something about forgotten languages or languages that were going to be extinct. And the idea of losing communication. And then I went to LA and I saw the show with this beautiful Salvatore Sciarrino piece. And one thing that really struck a very strong chord with me was the idea of community being essential to building a piece of, you know, art. And the idea that everybody there was really an essential part of that mechanism. And I thought it's really sort of like this pan thing. And then I had this stupid connection of like, oh, and there's Pan, you know, the god Pan, who we associate
half
with
man,
film
half
and
goat.
Music. Yeah. And the more we started looking at it, and then I like bounced the idea with Claire, and later on with Doug Fitch, you know, the director who is our collaborator.
Who will be on shortly.
And together, talking to Jane, like it just sort of became, like the story jumped in front of us. We did not choose Pan. Pan chose us.
And it became a kind of a Frankenbaby of the project and Jane's extraordinary vision and collaborative virtuosity. And Marcos and we knew that we couldn't mount what was very rapidly turning into not just a piece of musical drama, but it was turning into an opera.
Yeah.
And it's an opera that has 65 participants of all ages,
right,
that come from all walks of life, some of whom are veterans of
and
the
also
stage,
from all them. And also from all over the city too.
Exactly.
Which I think is one of the essential parts of it. One of the things that intrigues me so much, and I wish I could have said in many rehearsals, is the kids are meeting kids from neighborhoods they have never been to and hearing things from other children, shared experiences that are vastly different depending on where they are in Chicago.
Well, and I think that's one of the things that is so brilliant about the piece is that it is written like an ecology, right? Like everything is so essential, but it has these multiple kind of relationships. And that's what happens in terms of playing the piece. It creates new relationships. So the piece really reflects the story. The story really reflects the process. The process really reflects the vision. Like, it's kind of seamless in that way. And the people who participate, whether they're youth or whether they're adults, I mean, we have spanned from 7 to 78.
It must be like the proverbial 8 to 80. Ages.
The target audience for Pan is literally everybody. You know, that's what defines it.
Well, and Pan is the combining form for all, and we're serious about that.
Yeah, no,
there is nobody who's excluded from this project.
We have to take a little commercial break. You're going to hear from other collaborators in this, and you, the essential collaborator in this whole effort, which takes place next weekend at, I think it's 7 on Saturday and 3 o'clock on Sunday, in the astonishing, astonishing Fieldhouse, the Golden Dome Fieldhouse in Garfield Park, which may be a place some of you have not visited in a long time. It's one of Chicago's treasures. The entire park is, but the Golden Dome is really, really something. So stay tuned. You'll hear from some of the other collaborators. But then again, as I said, you can be the principal and probably most important collaborator just by showing up. It's free. They have told me that they have an unlimited seating there, and if you get there and it's too crowded, they will throw you out and you can listen from outside, because Garfield Park is indeed beautiful. I will tell you, before I get a little commercial, that on November 6th, you have the power to influence the course of politics by following the most comprehensive local political news online at chicagotribune.com/midterms. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. We have more people here. We are celebrating and trying to get you to go to Project Anne's Pan. I know that's kind of a Project Anne's Pan. It's an opera. It's an opera that is accessible. I know the word opera may put off people. Like, I think the soon-to-be ex-mayor of Chicago is like not an opera fan. I hate opera. And a lot of people say that. You know what that means? That means you've never seen an opera. That means, or you saw an opera when you were 4 and said, Dad, who's Rigoletto? What's that supposed to mean? This is different. Opera used to be the entertainment for the masses, just as Shakespeare used to be the entertainment for the masses. Jane Sachs, we are joined by two more of your collaborators, and they are...
Hello, I'm Doug Fitch. I'm the director and designer of this production.
When did you get involved, Doug?
Just as soon as Claire called me up and said, Doug, you want to do this? And I said, yes.
Did it seem at all daunting to you? I mean, because it's so... I think it's so new, and that may be for an artist what attracts one.
Yeah,
to a
that's
project.
What attracts us.
Yeah. Do you want to do Snow White? And you say, well, no, I know that story.
No. I think what's daunting is when you finally realize what you've done all these ways. You put it up there, and then you go like, "Oh, geez, now it's going to open." What are we doing? But thinking about things, developing something like this, and particularly when it's in a collaborative process like that, it's such a joy. And this is a great team, really wonderful team. Claire called up and said, "Doug, we're going to do a show. It's called Pan. I don't know what it is."
And Levy Lorenzo, you are the sound designer of this project. What were the challenges? Obviously, you know that Claire over here is the world's most famous flautist, and arguably the best flautist in the world, young as you may be, Claire. What challenge? Anything daunting for you, or is it just on this same level of excitement that all of you seem to feel about this thing?
Definitely the same level of excitement. I was brought on the project about a year and a half ago, and just to collaborate with a composer and a performer and a director as being a sound engineer, I'm not usually asked to jump in that early in the project. So it was great to be able to contribute ideas from the very beginning.
So sometimes you're just presented with a fait accompli that here's our show, design the sound.
Exactly.
And you say, no, that's too pay me and I'll do it, but that's too boring for me.
Well, there's definitely that standard straight-ahead sound engineer role in this, but I built custom sound effects for this show, working closely with Marco, saying I wanted to sound just like this, and there was no equipment that existed that could do that. So I programmed it and designed it.
Give me an example.
He wanted these big sort of filter chords so that when she played one note, there would be five notes that happened in parallel to her. So as she would go up and down, those filters would automatically follow her. And they're like kind of very mystical, sort of almost sometimes demonic kind of effects. So it really brings her into a different sort of atmosphere and different dimension.
And then you first performed this show in New York in March. And the essence of it is, too, it's not just you guys up on a stage, hardly, but it is a effort to draw people from around. I'm not sure in New York, there were some older people from sort of a nursing home, an older person's place, and some here. Here you've got people from the Chicago People's Music School, which is on the north side, and a number of other outposts, and another place that is located in Garfield Park. When those people come into the process, I know on some level it's got to be terribly exciting for you to see little kids, many of them, just brighten with this kind of musical and theatrical and operatic possibility. What are there difficulties, though, in teaching them to play and teaching them to act, but they're... As the director,
well, I just want to say quickly.
Behave.
Yeah, well, they're actually pretty well behaved. They have a fantastic program, but I just want to speak quickly to the notion of opera, because people think about opera, as you were saying, it's a highfalutin something or other.
Sure.
Don't know what that's going to be like, but that's not for us. You know? But this is a very different kind of opera. It's really an opera. We call it an opera because that word really just simply means work, like a work of art or a piece of music.
Right.
That's the way we're taking it. Although it's a story. It's a very narrative piece, and it tells the story of Pan. It is an opera written for a solo flute and community. So that's the way it's been conceived.
Mm. That New York show, what did you all, including you, Claire, and you, Jane Sachs, what did each one of you talk, what did you learn from that show that you are now, it's kind of like, I'm not saying that's like the AAA baseball team, you picked out the best people, you didn't bring anybody from that show here. You have a whole new crowd of people, but what did you individually learn from the shows at the Kitchen in New York, Claire?
Well, you know, it's interesting hearing Levy talk about how unusual it is to bring a sound engineer into the process so early. And we couldn't do any of this without. I mean, Levy quite literally makes the flute do meta flute and superhuman things. But I think that's a really beautiful metaphor for what the project as a totality does by bringing the audience in as a collaborator. On the first rehearsal, we're not saying the audience is a collaborator in this philosophically. No, we're actually making music with and learning from, not teaching to, but learning from our audience on day one in a rehearsal. Mm. And that is, that's something that I've never had an opportunity to do at this level of depth, at this level of collaborative, I would call it free-falling. You know, we are every single rehearsal and every meeting, we're inventing, we're confronting. The work is incredibly difficult. Of course, it's exhilarating, and working with eight-year-olds, watching their transformations, also watching my own transformation being taught by an eight-year-old, all kinds of things that I didn't know at the beginning of rehearsal. You know, this goes, it goes every single direction. But that that porousness between the audience, the performer, the sound engineer, the creative producer, the director, everybody at every level. That's what, to me, is the, it's the most exciting, it's the most enriching, and I've never had a chance to do anything like it. You know, we do have superhuman powers when we work together,
yeah.
And it reminds me of something that, you know, especially in this day and on this particular week, everything that's happened in the country this week, something Angela Davis said years ago, that it's in collectivity that we find reservoirs of hope and optimism. And that's what gives us our superhuman powers.
It sounds exhilarating for you, and I'm looking at all of you nodding your heads, too.
Yeah, I think that's that kind of, you know, how much we're all sharing the depth of the experience. And so when we talk about the idea that we're learning with and from and beside and behind and in front of and, you know, that kind of dimension. And it reminds me of this one young woman after Marcos had just so brilliantly talked about this lost language and the idea of giving voice to Syrinx, whose voice was taken away, and using this idea of lost language. And this one young girl turned to me and she said, you know, when I play my violin, I think of it as a lost language. I say things to it and with it that I don't tell anybody else. I never thought I could be part of something where I could have that conversation out in the open. And that, I mean, even saying it now, it's like, it's incredible, right? Yeah. And that's the kind of depth. And I think when we're all saying how much it has transported us, and again, going back to the seamlessness of the evolution of the story and what happens to Pan, that's what's happening to all of us in a time that that kind of velocity is happening in the world.
We've got to take another commercial break, and all that means, artists, is that people listen to this show or this station. Again, Project Anne's Pan will be Friday night at 7 o'clock and Saturday at 3 o'clock at the glorious Golden Dome Fieldhouse, 100 Central Park, if memory serves, in Garfield Park. For those of you who grew up around Garfield Park, as did Jane Sachs's father, but haven't been back in some time, this is the perfect opportunity to do so. We'll get a couple commercials in the news and continue this conversation. Welcome back to After Hours with me, Rick Hogan. I was some of the things I say during the commercial breaks would make me the new Howard Stern, but they're honest, and I mean them all. This Friday and Saturday, Friday at 7 and Sunday at 3, Project Anne's Pan, a creative endeavor by these fabulous five people sitting with me in the studio, and a number of other people, many of them from the Chicago West Community Music School, some others from the People's Music School, which has been around a little longer. The Chicago West Community Music School is in Garfield Park. The People's Music School started in Uptown and has spread to various oases across the land. The Poetry Foundation is behind this. Allstate, which I think runs one of these studios or backs one. This is like the Allstate studio here, is backing it too, because that's what this needs. But I got to tell you guys something. I have not seen this. I didn't fly to New York to see it in March, but this sounds like the cool, I swear to you, it sounds like the coolest show in the world. And I am trying to convince you people listening that get the word opera out of your head for a second and think of this as a musical, theatrical, vibrant, experience with the world's greatest sound designer and the world's greatest flautist, and you may indeed be the world's greatest director, and you may be the world's greatest composer, and you may be the world's greatest creative producer, but you're all in this as a whole. Claire, why should people go to this show this weekend?
Because it's unlike anything you've ever heard or seen.
And wait, you stole that from my story. Wait a minute.
I can tell you that with total certainty because it's unlike anything that we have ever seen or heard. And I mean that not just about the project and our experience of it when we get on stage, but every single rehearsal. I discover myself newly. I discover my collaborators and I discover my community and the meaning of that community newly. And that has an immediate impact on the music we make and the way that we're shaping this story and the way that it ripples out. And so that experience is unlike anything I've ever had the privilege of being a part of. And I would just love
come
to
see. Yeah, come see.
Have it with all of you.
Marcos Balter, the composer of this, in addition to listening to your music, why should people come out there Friday and Saturday?
Well, besides of what Claire said, I would also add, because it's never the same twice. Yeah. It's always a very unique experience, and it is only really fully understood communally. And you have to be there to really take it in. And you can come multiple times and have multiple, you know, journeys within the piece.
I wish this was running for a month out there. Douglas Fitch, as the director of this, not only for people to see your expertise as a director, but why should they come out there Friday and Saturday?
Well, I think one of the reasons that it's really an exciting piece is because it really, in a way, in a new way, certainly I've never experienced something like this, it explores this ancient story, this ancient past, and it connects us directly to that moment in time. A moment in time where a great artist, Pan, who was perhaps mythological, maybe real, created artworks that we will never hear, but we can only imagine. And because we can imagine them, that's what we're doing here. We're kind of trying to reimagine what kind of feeling and sounds that is. But we, in this particular version of it, we're talking about his one of the nymphs that he had a particular attraction to, whose name was Syrinx. He stole her voice and made an instrument, the pan flute, out of this. In our version, it's the only version I've ever seen of or heard of that we actually give her voice back to her at the end. And the time that we're living in right now, this seems to have... I don't think that when we were inventing this story, it really... that the Me Too movement hadn't begun or...
Right.
But it really has suddenly become an extraordinarily important, touching thing to see unfold.
Sounds so provocative. And now, the world's greatest sound designer.
Man,
Come, hear my sounds that I designed.
Well, it is a full immersive sonic experience. Yeah. In addition to the sounds that I'm responsible for, which are essentially all sounds that come from speakers, the acoustic sounds are amazing. There's triangles and bamboo glasses. Chimes and wine glasses and bottles spread out through the audience. And the sound of the flute is amazing. And it might be hard for people listening out there to imagine what a solo 60-minute flute performers might be like. But there's all the flutes, don't forget. There's the piccolo, the alto, the bass flute, the normal flute, and the Big Bertha contrabass flute.
which Claire can play them all, though.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so they're just such great sounds to hear live.
You people inspire me. Claire Chase, Marcos Balter, Douglas Fitch, Levy Lorenzo, and you, Jane Sachs. It is Project Anne's Pan, Friday and Saturday in Garfield Park. Knock 'em dead. I know it's going to be entertaining as hell. It's an opera, but you go there. You think of it as an opera, and you'll come out of there saying, man, that is the coolest thing I've ever seen. I cannot thank you enough for coming on the show. And I also cannot thank you enough for doing this and doing it in Garfield Park. We'll be right back.